kind of running out of things to say in opening up before these lessons. Appreciate the words that have been said. I do appreciate so much the confidence that you placed in me to come and share with you God's Word. I know that we're not here to hear me. We're here to study from God's Word, and I hope that we always keep that in mind. But I do appreciate the opportunity to be with you, the hospitality that has been extended. And as I said before, you really have encouraged me. I think sometimes you feel like preachers just say things like that when they get up, and that's expected, but that truly is the case. I've been strengthened and encouraged, and I think I'll be able to go back home in many ways refreshed from the time that we've spent here and that I've been among you, and I do hope that you feel the same way. We're going to close out our series of lessons this morning by looking not specifically at the life of Jesus, but really by looking at some of the individuals that surrounded Jesus and examining the lives of some other individuals as they came in contact with him. And I entitled the lesson, Meeting at the Cross of Jesus. And I hope by the time we get done, you'll understand why that is the case. But for right now, I'm just going to leave it at that and begin by talking about an individual who played an important role in the life of Jesus, and that is Mary, the mother of Jesus. When we talk about Mary, the mother of Jesus, I think we all recognize the fact that she was a remarkable person. And I think we sometimes have a tendency maybe to talk about her a little bit less than some of the other Bible characters that we might discuss, and that might be because there are so many misunderstandings concerning her. But when we talk about her character and we recognize all of the speculation that is out there, we know that there are theories that have developed over the years that are extremely dangerous, and some of those that are false. The perpetual virginity of Mary, the Immaculate Conception, her bodily assumption. Some even worship her as the Mother of God. And all of those things are not true and should not be done. And when we talk about these Bible characters, I think more than ever we need to be careful that we don't speak where the Bible doesn't speak. We're not always given a lot of information concerning some of the individuals that we read about in the Scriptures, and we're never given all of the information. But there's always areas where we don't have things filled in for us, and there's always people who want to kind of jump into those areas and insert their own ideas. And I don't want to do that this morning when we talk about Mary, the mother of Jesus. I don't want to do that whenever we talk about anything that's in the Scriptures. But I do want to talk about what we do know. And when we consider Mary the mother of Jesus, I think one of the things that we can establish is that she did come from a very good background and a very good family. And you can sometimes tell a lot about a person from their family. It's not always the case. Hopefully, as years go by, people look at me and they look at how my parents chose to live and how my family lived for generations. I hope that there is a serious change that they see there, that I've turned out differently than my family did. It's been very worldly in their approach to things. But many times we look at individuals, and if they have a good family, we expect the children to be good. And as a general rule, that is the case, that we'll see generations after generations of those who faithfully serve the Lord. And when we consider Mary, we know from the genealogies that are recorded for us that she was a descendant of King David, as was her husband Joseph. That they both descended through that family line, and even though that family had serious flaws, it also had a history of serving the Lord. There were generations among that family line that didn't do what they were supposed to do, that had serious sins and shortcomings in their service to the Lord, but there were many others who did serve the Lord and did care about him, and that there's a good family line through which Mary had descended. When we see more of Mary's family, in her relative, Elizabeth, when we talk about the birth of John the Baptist and his parents, Zacharias, Elizabeth's husband, was a faithful priest. No indication that he was not trying to live the way the Lord had told him to live. Zacharias and Elizabeth brought John the Baptist into the world. And it was a holy and a righteous family through which he entered the world. That's part of the family of Mary, the mother of Jesus. And beyond the family connection, her own character is attested to early on. First time we're really introduced to Mary is when the angel Gabriel appeared to her and told her about the birth of Jesus. It's really the first time we read much about her. And I don't want to go too far into the virgin birth right now, but I want you to notice what was said about Mary on this occasion. In Luke chapter 1 and in verse 28, we're told that coming in, he said to her, "Hail, favored one, the Lord is with you." Hail, favored one, the Lord is with you. That's quite a greeting. I don't think I've ever been greeted that way before. Walk into the room, "Hail, favored one, the Lord is with you." Look what he goes on to say. In verse 30, the angel said to her, "Do not be afraid, Mary, for you have found favor with God." When we read in Luke chapter 1, verse 42 through 45, when she goes to visit her relative Elizabeth, it says she cried out with a loud voice and said, "Blessed among women are you, and blessed is the fruit of your womb. And how has it happened to me that the mother of my Lord should come to me? For behold, when the sound of your greeting reached my ears, the baby leaped in my womb for joy. And blessed is she who believed that there would be a fulfillment of what had been spoken to her by the Lord." That we have these comments made about Mary. It shows that she was a good person. She was favored by the Lord. She had found favor in the eyes of the Lord. She was blessed among women. She believed God. And yet in all of this, Mary didn't act proud. I think we can notice that as well. In verse 38, Mary said, "Behold, the bondslave of the Lord, be it done to me according to your word." And the angel departed from her. He gives her this greeting, "You found favor with God, you're the favored one, you're the one through whom the Messiah is going to come into the world." And she responds, I'm the Lord's bondslave. May it happen the way you said it's happened, but I'm just a servant in this. This is God who's choosing to do this." She kept her humility. Verses 46 through 48, Mary said, "My soul exalts the Lord, and my spirit has rejoiced in God my Savior. For he has had regard for the humble state of his bondslave. For behold, from this time on, all generations will count me blessed or blessed." And she, again, exults in God and she gives God the credit. And she says, "He's the one who's considered my condition. And he's the one who's doing this." And she says that from now on, all generations will count me blessed. And certainly we would count her blessed. And we can see from even these early introductions that she had a good character. That she was blessed in these things. But even there, we think more about Mary. And we have to realize that there had to be tremendous difficulties in the task that she faced. That yes, she was blessed by God. But this had to be hard. Difficulties in part because perhaps she was apparently very young. We're introduced to her as a betrothed woman, not married. We're not told exactly how old she was, and there is a little bit of speculation there, which I just said I don't really want to do. But most authorities would say for her to be a betrothed woman and not be married yet would probably even put her in her teenage years. She was very young, if not that young, at least a young woman. And yet, even at this young age, she had a good reputation. She had kept herself pure and holy. She had done what she was supposed to do. She was serving the Lord in her life. And yet she was presented with this task of being the mother of the Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. When she found out about Jesus, she handled the news with maturity and with faith. I think there's no doubt that she was puzzled. Luke chapter 1, verse 34, Mary said to the angel, "How can this be since I am a virgin?" And she wasn't dumb. She's here told that you're going to have a child. She says, I know where children come from, and I can't have a child. Now, how can that be? And there's some puzzlement there. But I don't think there was doubt. There wasn't doubt that God would do this. She was just expressing, I don't understand how that's going to happen. She accepted her task joyously. But I also want you to imagine the difficulties that might be involved in raising the Son of God. The ridicule that she might encounter from the locals. The difficulty of raising other children along with Jesus. Those are some of the areas where people speculate about Mary. How could she have handled all of this? How could she have dealt with that? We're not told. How could she have dealt with this, especially without her husband Joseph, as it seems that he disappears from the stage. And usually we assume that perhaps he had passed away from the time when Jesus was 12 and then when he's about 30 and starting his ministry, Joseph is gone. Was she a single mother during some of this? Raising not only Jesus, but the other children as well. And we have obvious questions regarding her relationship with Jesus. As his mother, perhaps that's what most interests us, and that's where some of the danger comes in. How did Jesus treat his mother? How did she treat him? What kind of a child was Jesus? Some of these things were even brought out a few years ago in Mel Gibson's film when he did The Passion of the Christ, and he inserted in that a lot of tradition and a lot of just their own ideas and how that relationship would have existed. But, you know, that's something that people wonder about. What would that would have been like? And in truth, we're not given a lot of this information. We're told on a number of occasions that Mary was present when different events occurred, but we're not given a lot of the details. In fact, it seems that in some respects, there's even a slight separation that took place between Jesus and his mother. Mel Gibson tried to play up this closeness between them. I'm not sure that I would get that out of the Scriptures, and I'm not insinuating in any way that Jesus acted inappropriately toward his mother, that he didn't give her the proper respect and honor that she deserved. He certainly did. He certainly fulfilled the law, and he would have treated her the way you should treat your mother. But there does seem to be a little bit of distance when we notice some of these occasions, like in Luke chapter 2, verses 48 and 49, when they saw him, they were astonished, and his mother said to him, "Son, why have you treated us this way? Behold, your father and I have been anxiously looking for you." And he said to them, "Why is it that you were looking for me? Did you not know that I had to be in my father's house? I had to be about my father's business when Jesus was at the temple, the age of 12. He was in there teaching the law, and he was in there doing spiritual things." And she comes and says, "You know, your father and I were worried about you." And Jesus, in his response, I don't believe being disrespectfully, said, "You know, this is what I'm supposed to do. I was at my father's house. I was about my father's business." He's saying, you know, my relationship is to God more than to Joseph, more than to this relationship, and perhaps a little bit of distance there. At Cana in Galilee, in John chapter 2, verses 3 through 5, when the wine gave out, the mother of Jesus said to him, "They have no wine." And Jesus said to her, "Woman, what do I have to do with you? My hour is not yet come." His mother said to the servants, "Whatever he says to you, do it." She comes to him on that occasion when he's at that wedding feast and the wine runs out, and she comes and says, "They have no wine." And his response, I don't want to take it too harsh in English, because again, I don't think it's there. "Woman, what do I have to do with you? This is not my concern. This is not what I'm about." Seemed to be some of what Jesus was saying. "My hour is not yet come." She knew that he could do something about it. He's saying that, you know, that's not really necessarily my task here. Yet she still followed through. Whatever he says to do, do. And he does do something about this. He does provide the wine. But again, that relationship between him and his mother may be a little bit different than what we might have imagined. In Luke chapter 8, verses 19 through 21, his mother and brothers came to him, and they were unable to get to him because of the crowd. And it was reported to him, "Your mother and your brothers are standing outside wishing to see you." But he answered and said to them, "My mother and my brothers are those who hear the word of God and do it." Again, talking about what really matters here are the spiritual things. My mother and brothers are those who care about God. That's what I'm concerned about. And then ultimately, even at the cross, where we find her there, in John chapter 19, verses 25 through 27. "Therefore the soldiers did these things. But there was standing by the cross of Jesus his mother and his mother's sister, Mary the wife of Clopas and Mary Magdalene. When Jesus therefore saw his mother and the disciple whom he loved standing nearby, he said to his mother, 'Woman, behold your son.' Then he said to the disciple, 'Behold your mother.' And from that hour, the disciple took her into his own household." As Jesus came to the cross, and as she came to the cross, there's this last exchange between him and her. And I think that expression has sometimes been misunderstood when he said, "Woman, behold your son." In fact, some of the songs that we sing, they kind of misapply that. That Jesus is up there and telling Mary, "Look at me." That's not what the context implies. He saw Mary there, and he saw the disciple whom he loved, John, there. And he said to Mary, "Behold your son." And he's talking about John. And he says to John, "Behold your mother." And he's entrusting Mary to John. That's what Jesus is doing there on the cross. He's handing off that relationship for his mother to the disciple whom he loves. He's expecting that disciple whom he loves to take care of his mother. He's telling his mother, you take John in my place. You take that disciple whom I love. And let him be your family. We're told that's what happened. From that hour, that disciple took her into his own household, and he assumed the responsibility for Jesus' mother. And yet, there's no question that there is a close and a loving relationship there. That Mary came through all of these things that we can't imagine what it would have been like to raise Jesus, to care for him all those years, and then to have him begin his ministry and to see what he's doing and the spiritual focus that he puts there at times, even kind of acting like, you know, hey, well, where's time for us? You're going off and doing these things about God and not with us. But she comes to the cross of Jesus. And Mary had to decide what she would do about Jesus. You know, she had a decision to make there that wasn't unlike anybody else's decision. Even though she had known of the birth, she had been involved in the birth, she had raised him, she knew him better than others would know him, she still had to decide how will she react when Jesus is hanging on the cross and when he goes through the death and burial and resurrection. Would she follow him or not? Would she stay faithful to him? Would she see him for who he is and become a Christian or not? She found herself standing there at the cross of Jesus, looking up at the Lord, and had a decision to make. But she wasn't the only one. This morning I want you to notice someone else who was standing beneath the cross of Jesus while his mother was there, looking up at him. Another woman named Mary. Mary Magdalene. And I find it interesting that she would be so prominently mentioned, because we know virtually nothing about this woman. You might think there's quite a bit said about her, but you'd be mistaken. All of the speculation that takes place about Mary Magdalene, it's not a lot there. Again, in fact, almost everything we're told about her found in the crucifixion and resurrection sections of the gospel. Luke chapter 8 and verse 2 is the only reference to her by name outside of those parameters. The only reference to her by name. Except for those situations right around the crucifixion and the resurrection that we were talking about there at the end of his life. This is it in Luke chapter 8 and verse 2, and also some women who had been healed of evil spirits and sicknesses. Mary, who was called Magdalene, from whom seven demons had gone out. That they were following Jesus. They were helping with his needs and during his ministry. That's the only time she's mentioned by name, except for the fact that she's there at the crucifixion. And she's there at the resurrection. And of course, this has allowed people to let their imaginations run wild. We talk about Mary, the mother of Jesus, having speculation concerning her. There's even more about Mary Magdalene, where Mary, the mother of Jesus, has been exalted and worshipped beyond what any human being should be. Mary Magdalene, throughout much of history, has had the opposite done with her. She's been viewed as an utterly sinful woman. And again, I know in recent years there's more speculation. Did Jesus have a relationship with her? Trying to present her almost as the wife of Jesus or carrying his children, the nonsense that's just brought up by people who look for things to make up along the way. But the idea that Mary Magdalene was an utterly sinful woman has not occurred without some reason or cause. Mary Magdalene has often been identified with the sinful woman of Luke chapter 7 who anointed Jesus' feet with a bottle of perfume. We're told there on that occasion that this woman anointed his feet, and it said, if you realize what type of woman this was who did that to you, you wouldn't even let her touch you. They saw that woman as a very sinful woman, but it should be noted that this woman is not identified as Mary. That passage doesn't call her Mary. Might have been. It doesn't say. Adding to the confusion is the fact that Mary, the sister of Martha and Lazarus, also anointed Jesus' feet on another occasion. And so we have a similar occurrence where another Mary did this. And I think in some people's minds, they just kind of confuse all these things together. And they said, this is Mary Magdalene. They associate this sinful woman, perhaps even a prostitute, with Mary Magdalene. And we really don't know that. But what we do know about her is that she came from the city of Magdala in Galilee, a village on the western shore of Galilee. And although we don't know much about the town itself, we know that Galilee in general was despised by the Judean Jews because it was considered sinful. Galilee of the Gentiles is how they would refer to that region. Galilee, where those sinful people live. If we could think of some region of our country that we might think is full of sinners, and depending where you live, we've got areas like that. Come from the West Coast or the Left Coast or Las Vegas. You know, you think of these sin cities where people live, and if anyone came out of there, certainly they wouldn't be righteous, wouldn't be holy. She came from an area like that. She came from Magdala in Galilee. Galilee of the Gentiles. And most of the Jews would have despised that fact. She'd been possessed, and not possessed just by one demon, but by seven demons. That's how she was identified in Luke chapter 8 and verse 2 and in other passages. That was really her distinguishing characteristic. The woman from whom Jesus had cast out seven demons, that's how she's identified. And even if she's not that sinful woman or prostitute of Luke chapter 7, you can imagine that that fact alone would mean that her life had not been that great before Jesus came along and cast out these demons. That demon possession, as we read about it in the first century, usually involved severe illnesses, sometimes mental illnesses. The way that they reacted, that's how we would portray it. That's what the demons caused for those individuals. They lost control over themselves. They're living out in the wilderness, oftentimes naked. They're crazy. They're wild individuals. The demons would do that to individuals. She had seven in her. Can you imagine how she acted? Can you imagine what life was like for this woman from Galilee who was possessed with all of these demons until Jesus healed her, cast the demons out? At some point, Jesus did this. Like he was doing with so many other people during his ministry, we're not told exactly when, exactly how, or where. We're told that he did. And that had a tremendous impact on her life as well. In fact, I imagine that's part of what caused her to follow Jesus, if not the entire reason that she initially began following him. But she was more than just a simple follower. Anybody could have walked around with Jesus, listened to what he had to say. That'd be good. You know, somebody says, hey, this is interesting. He's talking about some spiritual things. He talks in a different way than any of our teachers of the law. Let me see what he's got to say. There were a lot of people that did that. She did more than that. Luke chapter 8, verses 1 through 3. Came about soon afterwards, they began going about from one city and village to another, proclaiming and preaching the kingdom of God, and the 12 were with him, and also some women who had been healed of evil spirits and sicknesses, Mary, who was called Magdalene, from whom seven demons had gone out, and Joanna, the wife of Chuza, Herod's steward, and Susanna, and many others who were contributing to their support out of their private means. That she wasn't just following Jesus. She was supporting him. It was her private money that contributed to Jesus and the apostles being able to travel around and proclaim the gospel and heal others. And it kind of reminded me what we talked about this morning before the giving. Think about what you have received and what you want to give so that others could receive that. I think that's how Mary Magdalene reacted. Jesus came and healed me of 70. He turned my life around. And I'll give everything I've got so that He can do the same thing for other people. He can go into other cities and change their lives as well. She appreciated what Jesus had done for her. This wasn't the only occasion on which she helped. When Jesus went to Jerusalem, she followed to care for His needs. We're told in Matthew chapter 27, verse 55, many women were there looking on from a distance who had followed Jesus from Galilee, ministering to Him, among whom was Mary Magdalene, along with Mary, the mother of James and Joseph, and the mother of the sons of Zebedee. And she followed Him to Jerusalem to minister to Him. And that was what brought her to the cross. She didn't give up on following Jesus. Even when His disciples fled, she did not. Mark chapter 15, verse 40, and there were also some women looking on from a distance, among whom were Mary Magdalene and Mary, the mother of James, the less, and Joseph, and Salome. That here the disciples fled. She was at a distance, but she was looking on. She stayed there to watch Jesus lifted up on the cross. And it's really at the cross of Jesus that these three lives met. When we talk about Mary, the mother of Jesus, and we talk about Mary Magdalene, and we talk about Jesus Himself, this is where Mary and Mary came together. They met at the cross of Jesus. And the lives of these two women would be changed forever. They came from totally different backgrounds. On the one hand stood the mother of the Lord. She had been holy and righteous from her youth. She was a Judean Jew from the family of David. You couldn't get better pedigree than that. You couldn't get a better background to be brought to this moment and shown the Messiah and the fulfillment of the promises of God. This is a Jewish woman. Jewish, as Jewish as you could get. On the other hand, stood a woman whom Jesus had healed, a demon-possessed woman who had grown up in Galilee of the Gentiles, perhaps even a prostitute, a sinful woman if she's to be identified with that individual. Not one that many people would look to, not one that many people would have respected, would have expected to be there with the Messiah. Not likely companions. But that didn't matter now. The different backgrounds or relationships made no difference. The fact that one was the mother of Jesus and one was the woman that Jesus had healed, where they came from, now they met at the cross of Jesus. And they each had to decide what to do. They had to decide what to do about Jesus. What they would choose. When we talk about Mary, the mother of Jesus, she made the choice that we would expect. How could she not remain true to Jesus, her Son, the Son of God? At the cross, Jesus had entrusted her to John. Acts chapter 1, verse 14 shows her praying with the disciples. She became a disciple. She became a Christian. She followed Jesus. She accepted what He taught. And standing there at the cross, when she looked up at Him, I think she came to believe everything He had said. If she didn't already believe it, she'd been told by the angel, you think, how could she not do that? And that's a good point. We expect her to do that. She knew about this all along. But what about Mary Magdalene? What about her situation? Did she remain true to the one who had healed her, who had given her back her life? Well, what do we read about her? She watched where He was buried. Mark chapter 15, verse 47, and Mary Magdalene and Mary, the mother of Joseph, were looking on to see where He was laid. After He died there on the cross, she goes and she wants to see what's going on there. Mark chapter 16 and verse 1. When the Sabbath was over, Mary Magdalene and Mary the mother of James and Salome brought spices that they might come and anoint Him. She was among the first to come to the tomb on the first day of the week. In John 20 and in verse 2, we start reading in verse 1. Now on the first day of the week, Mary Magdalene came early to the tomb while it was still dark and saw the stone already taken away from the tomb. And so she ran and came to Simon Peter and to the other disciple whom Jesus loved and said to them, they have taken away the Lord out of the tomb. We do not know where they have laid Him. That she came there again to the tomb and she was the one who ran to tell Peter and John what had taken place. And she returned to the tomb. In John chapter 20, beginning in verse 11, if you'll turn over there, that's a longer reading. But in John chapter 20, beginning in verse 11, it says, but Mary was standing outside the tomb weeping. And so as she wept, she stooped and looked into the tomb. And she saw two angels in white sitting, one at the head and one at the feet, where the body of Jesus had been lying. And they said to her, woman, why are you weeping?
She said to them, "Because they have taken away my Lord, and I do not know where they have laid Him." When she had said this, she turned around and saw Jesus standing there and did not know that it was Jesus. Jesus said to her, "Woman, why are you weeping? Whom are you seeking?" Supposing Him to be the gardener, she said to Him, "Sir, if you have carried Him away, tell me where you have laid Him, and I will take Him away." Jesus said to her, "Mary." She turned and said to Him in Hebrew, "Rabboni," which means teacher. Jesus said to her, "Stop clinging to me, for I have not yet ascended to the Father, but go to my brethren and say to them, I ascend to my Father and your Father, and my God and your God." Mary Magdalene came, announcing to the disciples, "I have seen the Lord," and that He had said these things to her. That she was able to go to the tomb that first day of the week. And she saw the Lord. And she followed Him. And that she was faithful to Him. That her life was changed there when Jesus had healed her in one sense. But also when she came to the cross of Jesus. When she witnessed what He did in His death and His burial and His resurrection. And that changed her life as well. The fact of the matter is, we don't read anymore about these women. It amazes many people that more is not said about Mary, the mother of Jesus. How come nothing else was said about her? After this moment, after these things, she's praying with the disciples. She's there in the early chapters of Acts, but never pointed out again. Well, she wasn't the focus. Jesus was. She wasn't an essential part of that story anymore. Nothing more is said about Mary Magdalene. But I think it's significant that we're left with the picture of these two women following Jesus. That they were faithful to Him. And I think there are some lessons that are contained in these examples for us. That when we come to meet at the cross of Jesus, that it really doesn't matter what your background is, or where you came from. I know we sometimes think that only certain people will respond to the gospel. And depending on what your experience is, you might place the emphasis at one extreme or the other. Those who grew up in godly households, had the advantage of learning the scriptures from their youth, heard gospel preaching their whole life. We have an expression that they grew up, we'll say, in the church. And of course, we've had it explained before, you don't really grow up in the way you grow up in the church after you're Christian, but you don't grow up in the church before you're Christian. But grow up attending services of the church with a godly family and with that morality instructed to them. And sometimes people think, well, that's really the only good chance that someone has of becoming a Christian. You know, if they didn't grow up that way, it's not going to happen that way. Someone else, you know, they move away or their family splits. Oh, it's such a shame. They're never going to learn the Lord now. They're never going to come to Him because they didn't have all these blessings that I've had. Someone else, they might have come entirely out of the world. From a very worldly background, immersed in sin, squandering some of their years, and they come to learn the Lord, and they come back to learn, and they think that's the only people that you can reach out to. Those that are totally lost in sin, that don't understand anything about the Lord. The reality is the gospel is for all. The two Marys came from very different backgrounds, but faced the same choice, faced the same decision to make. And the same thing's true with us. We need to realize that our lives come together at the cross of Jesus. These two women, with all of their differences, had more in common than not because they followed Jesus. When they stood there, coming from the different backgrounds that they had and the different experiences that they had and the different lives that they had, what joined them together was stronger than all of those things. Didn't matter that one was a Judean Jew of the lineage of David and one was from Galilee and the Gentiles and had been possessed by demons. What they shared in the Lord united them. And we need to have the same focus and unity. It doesn't matter what our backgrounds are when we come to the Lord. It doesn't matter what those differences are. Because once we're at the cross, that changes everything. If you were to talk to me about my upbringing and my background, I guarantee you it's different from yours. Even if yours was similar, it's different. It's a different background. It might be radically different. If we look back at our lives from before I was a Christian and before you were a Christian, they could be two totally different pictures. But if we look at our lives from the time when I came to the cross of Jesus and you came from the cross of Jesus, I bet you they'd be the same. I bet you at that moment they merged together. And my experiences and your experiences, my goals and your goals, my hopes, my dreams, my aims are one with your hopes and dreams and aims. That's what happens at the cross of Jesus. It's there that we come in contact with one another. And that's what joins us. And that's so powerful. We need to not forget that. But it's also at the cross of Jesus that we meet Jesus. It's there that we have to make a decision. The world is always trying to emphasize when Jesus came to earth. This was December, you'd see that. They're trying to emphasize His birth, and they're trying to emphasize all those things that they say surround it. We often emphasize when Jesus went to the cross. We'll say, well, we're not to remember His birth, we're to remember His death. But the real question is, what will we do when we come to the cross? How will we react to that? How will we apply that to our lives? What will you do? That's the question that we need to ask this morning and every day. How will we live? Where are we going to go from this point forward? Now that our lives have met at the cross of Jesus, are we going to stay united and focused on what Jesus wants us to do? Are we going to let that make the change in our life? Are we going to crucify self? Take up our cross and follow Him or not? That's a task that we have. I've so enjoyed being here this week because I get to be with my family, even though I'm away from my family. And I think you all know what I mean there. I miss my wife and my daughters, and I've been blessed by the Lord to have them. I'm not usually emotional, I'm sorry. I'm thankful for that, and will be eternally grateful. But I have other brothers and sisters. I have some that I lost in the flesh to become a Christian, separated from my parents because they have different goals, and my brothers and sisters in the flesh because they have different goals. They live a different kind of lifestyle. The friends that I knew growing up, we don't really talk anymore because we don't have anything in common. But Jesus said, whoever gave up those relationships for me would gain so many more. And the households that perhaps I've been kicked out of and the brothers and sisters that I've lost have been replaced 100-fold. The other households that I'm now welcome into and the brothers and sisters that I have and the relationships that we share. That's what binds us together. That's what was happening when Mary and Mary came to the cross. When Mary and Mary are mentioned together, when Mary and Mary go to these other places, and when they became a part of that family that was Christ's family, with God as the Father and Christ as our brother, and the family that we're all adopted into as His children. We need to appreciate what we have, work to maintain it, and try to share it with others. One of the reasons that Christians are not more evangelistic, I'm convinced, in what they are. And I applaud your efforts for this meeting. I know that we can get disappointed because we look at all this effort that goes into handing out flyers and talking to others, and oftentimes we don't see a lot of visible results right away. We need to keep trying. But one of the reasons that we don't do more, and one of the reasons that we sometimes get burned out, is that we don't truly appreciate what we have. We forget what it's about. And the more we remember that, more will want to share it with others. I hope this week that you've been encouraged by looking to Jesus and all the lessons that we have covered. I said before, I wasn't really looking to tell you anything new, but to remind you of those same principles that we've heard time and time again. It's those principles, it's that word that will guide us home. Those same scriptures, that same truth that never changes. And I encourage you to remain faithful. You've encouraged me. And I hope to see you sooner than this. But if I don't see you again in this life, I want to meet you in heaven. I want to see you there. And I hope that we will all together work to be there in the presence of the Father. Thank you.